Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Discover Covington County Hospital's Swing Bed Program, offering comprehensive care for patients transitioning from acute hospital care to home. With a focus on rehabilitation, we ensure a smooth journey back to your home environment. Choose Covington County Hospital, where your health care matters.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome to the Garden Mama Show. Thank you so very much for your interest, for being here, for turning on the radio, for driving through the state, maybe just with it happening to be on, however you got here. Thank you very much. It's a gray day out there, which reminds me, there's a couple of songs I need to bring about gray weather. We're getting into a patch of it. That's the good news, though, for those of you who want to be planting trees and shrubs, digging and dividing any kind of perennials, really. In the central part of what is the majority of our listening area, which is Zone 8 for the most part, but Zone 7B, you guys are not going to be all that cold either. And of course, farther south, my goodness, the warmer climate, y'all are already kicking it. I've been watching what y'all are up to. There's a lot going on already in that part of the area. Many, many things going on, my friends. I have to say that I decided to do something I don't do often enough. And that was in the newsletter this week. I wrote about different kinds of gardening, different kinds of container gardening, in particular things using reservoirs. We have so many people who feel that they can't garden anymore or don't even want to take it up because they don't have a place for a flower bed or a vegetable garden or those kinds of things. Maybe you got a patio. Maybe you've got a sunroom. Maybe you've got a porch. All of those places are perfect for reservoir gardens, and if you're interested in knowing some more about it, I'll be more than happy to send you a copy, and maybe you'll want to subscribe. MamaOnAir@Yahoo.com. Okay? Okay. What's going on in your garden today? Let me hear from you. 888-808-8637. And, of course, the C Spire text line, 601-879-4395. I think we're just going to call that Mama's phone number. these are Mama's phone numbers on Saturday morning. That's all really we need to know. Well, I got to tell you something, Lance. We're late already today. It is, in fact, International Cat Rescue Day, and we have not rescued a cat recently.
Yeah, I mean, my cats, they've probably done more rescuing of and they call freeing of the birds and freeing of
seriously,
the frogs.
Seriously.
They've been in rescue mode.
My goodness. But the good news is that from your point of view, at least, it is indeed Egg McMuffin Day.
Yeah, of course, obviously.
Of course,
it is,
isn't every day.
Saturday morning.
Every day, right?
Yeah. Well, no, just Saturday mornings. And then on Sunday mornings, it's Chocolate Donut Day.
Oh, okay.
That's
I've got to get with your calendar a little better.
That's definitely
one. Can't do the McMuffin. I can do the chocolate donut once a week, though. That would really hurt me, but I would do it.
They're delicious.
If you tune in with us on supertalk.tv, you may check out a beautiful painting of a pineapple. It is not mine. It is a Georgia O'Keeffe that I could not resist sharing with y'all today because it's so gorgeous. Also, though, there is kind of a little mystery perennial there, asking folks what they think that is, and some more lovely phlox foliage too, because it's a beautiful week in my garden. Going to talk more about that in the next hour. We got a friend coming in, going to talk about your garden, his garden, my garden, all that sort of stuff. It'll be a good time. Now, I'm not going to say this is snakes on a plane, Lance, but we've got a couple of different snake stories today.
Nice.
In between phone calls.
I like snakes.
Even
stories,
a jellyfish story, which is another one of those rare ones. They don't do enough research into jellyfish, I don't think. We don't get to hear enough about all of that. Trey has weighed in this morning with a really cool picture of what looks to me, and yeah, he's sent a close-up now, looks like baby's breath spirea, which is usually the first one of the white flowering spireas to bloom. The way you can distinguish it, its leaves are a little bit lighter color and they're very small, but the flowers particularly are individually down the stems. They don't make tight clusters. There'll be a bunch of them, but they're not all bound up like the bridal wreath ones are. That's a beautiful plant. Really cool. Thanks for showing us today. I love that one. Thank you very much. Bubba and Starfield says it's not Saturday morning without us. You can eat whatever you want, Bubba, since you said that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very nice of you.
You can move into the next piece of, I don't know, it could be early day on chocolate croissants or something.
I wonder how the weather is up there today. I know State had to punt on a ball game yesterday.
I was going to say, I think there was
today.
Maybe today, maybe not. I don't know.
Ole Miss would have rather not played yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It was an ugly game.
Well, you've got to get through those too, though. You know.
Well, then, the walks, goodness gracious.
That's that stick-to-itiveness that we keep talking about, persistence.
Got to stay with it.
More than 100 million years ago, in the Wayback Machine today, the snake ancestors, we have to go back into the book today to look at this. They were, of course, little lizards. We've kind of known that for a long time. But how did they end up being, first of all, legless and so much faster and really so much more sophisticated after that now fairly famous asteroid impact that seems to have changed so many things and really indeed wiped out so many species all at once back in the time. Now, how do we end up into this? I love that the University of Michigan are the folks that are working on this. They say that speed is the answer. Snakes developed 3 times faster than their friends, the lizards, and that's how they got to be snakes, because they couldn't survive anywhere else. A lot of the stories that we're running into now, they're not stories, they're research reports, but I think I tell them like stories, I hope so, are a whole lot about how animals are or are not adapting to, for instance, warming soil temperatures or increasing wind speeds or the things that we're talking about so often with our plants. High temperatures this week, low temperatures next week, and what is the plant going to do? The animals can sometimes move and sometimes can't, so there's always a lot of that information moving along to us. But this was anciently, and frankly, the snakes made a better deal with the future than some of their other friends. They're much more versatile. They have a lot more, shall we say, food sources, speaking of things to be preyed upon. And that has led them to be a massive number of creatures. They've reported all of this in the journal Science because what they're trying to work on, of course, is a large new both genetic but also dietary study of snakes. The idea being that where they can survive, where they can adapt as they did it. Well, another time, if they can adapt to a different food source, for instance, they're going to be more fit to make it into the next century, at least, if not longer than that. But at the same time we look at that, we have to look all the way back to get our true snake story for this week. University of Queensland is letting us know that, guess what? You know how those people go and film documentaries and things in the Amazon? There's always somebody there doing that. Well, lucky for them, they had scientists with them that recognized the fact that they had found a previously undocumented species of giant anaconda. What? How did we not see this before? How did we miss this one? I don't understand it, but somehow or another, the indigenous folks said, oh, by the way, look over here. Ah! The Western scientists.
Big as a school bus.
I remember the picture I saw of that thing. Huge thing. And it is so... it's amazing to me that no one had pointed it out before, or that no one had, unfortunately, encountered it with other folks watching or something like that. But they went it took them the 10-day expedition into the deepest part of the jungle to find this particular snake.
You know that the local tribes were probably like, this is an area you're just not supposed to go.
Right. We don't go here.
This is sacred.
We don't go
something,
here.
God eats everything over here. And I mean, see this thing, woo,
it's really amazing.
It's a beast.
500 kilograms.
It's like a backhoe holding it up.
Yes.
And it was stressing.
The snake was about to win.
Capacity.
Yeah. The snake was. It's like when you watch them trying to turn over a beached whale, if you've ever seen those things where they pull the tools up and the tools flip over in the sand because they can't do it. It was that kind of a scene. It's really something. They did, in fact, paddle canoes down in the river system, and there were these anacondas lurking in the shadows waiting for lunch. They were trying hard not to be lunch.
Like the movie.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great movie.
I'll grant you that not everything is, you know, movies take a lot of license, but anacondas are tough.
Yeah, no.
Every reputation that they have throughout history has been...
Did you watch the Anaconda movies?
Oh, sure.
And the number two wasn't quite as good, and most number twos are.
I've had to... there's a whole lot of movies like that I've been in the presence of, and I couldn't tell you a thing about them except what they looked like, mm-hmm. and that one was, whoa.
In 97, it had... Think of the people that were in this movie.
Sure.
Talking about anacondas,
sure.
And I liked that. I actually thought the first one was pretty good.
Yeah,
John Voight, Jennifer Lopez, she was J-Lo, I think. You have Ice Cube, Owen Wilson, Eric Stoltz, and Danny Trejo.
Must have been a great party. I'm telling you, that's all I can think. So fun stuff, though, to think that we had one that they could. I mean, because you've seen them, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you, Trey. This is delightful. I will quote you in a little bit. Jackie wants to know, if you haven't pruned in muscadines, is it too late? If pruned late, will they produce fruit? Sometimes not. The reason we prune them when they're dormant is so that we can stimulate new growth that is stronger than what's laying there from the last year. If they haven't leafed out yet, if they haven't started to swell their buds, you know, you can tell when they're just about to burst. If they haven't done any of those things, then yes, I would say go ahead and do some pruning. I would not do heavy pruning, but I would shorten the canes and clean up anything that you don't want anymore. For instance, you might have very old canes that you realize are not going to be very productive anyway. Sure, go ahead and take those off. But what happens when we prune too late and the new growth is coming on is we get bunches of new growth, and we may or may not want that based on trying to get it to fruit. So if it hasn't started to leaf out yet, then yeah, go ahead and prune. I will tell you something that people have missed pruning entirely this year, and that are the plums and the Bradford pears. Between the wild plums and the Bradford pears, the whole world in my area is covered up in tiny white flowers. I'm really glad. It's sort of rainy and foggy, or I wouldn't be able to talk from all the pollen. But the good news is that they'll be done. But nobody got out and did any of that shaping or anything early. And I don't think too many people did much shaping on many other trees, too. So we're going to have kind of some wild growth this year. We'll deal with that as it comes along. I don't think that'll be a problem. The name of the snake, by the way, is Northern Green Anaconda, which of course implies that there is a Southern Green Anaconda. These are the Eunectes acayemas, but it is in the Ecuadorian Amazon. How beautiful. Very cool thing. Just, I can't believe we never saw it before. Interesting. Very interesting. Muscadines are so much fun, I think, because they grow really well, and if you find them, for example, if you're moving some that maybe were on a fence line and now it's overgrown, so you need to move the vines out from there, do go ahead and give them at least 3/4 of a day of sun. I have seen muscadines bear in the woods, but they don't make nearly as many fruit, and the fruit are not as sweet as those that get more sunlight. That's one of those things about... Most fruit requires at least 3/4 of a day to do its best. And many of them can take the whole day, which is great, but not everything. But the good news is most things can. But if you're trying to grow blueberries or figs or any of our more popular fruits, the more sun, the better. But they'll give you some performance like at my place where the west area is pretty well treed. We don't have late sun in that part of the garden. Not because of me. I probably would have cut the trees down if they'd been mine, but they're not. They're on the next property. I was tickled this week to get some new soil put together, and I've got some many, many perennials that need to be divided and potted up. I'm working on that this week, and I think there's going to be a really good second blooming. The daffodils bloomed, and then we got some rain. I was able to pick a bunch of them. They were beautiful. But I think they're also going, there's a bunch more buds, and maybe it's a later variety, or maybe it's just the way the year is turning out. We seem to be having a longer season with the daffodils, as well as the paper white narcissus out in the garden. That's kind of fun to me. I did notice that there were holes in one of the crinum lilies, and I don't I got to tell you, I have not seen anything back there poking around, you know, picking up the leaves and turning them over and looking for worms and that sort of stuff. I haven't seen anything, but it's such a wild area and the crinums are just kind of one little corner of it. I'm going to keep my eyes out and see what's trying to eat them. I don't like that. I don't like that too much. There's some very interesting research this week about the possibility that we can reduce the use of pesticides on farms, and I would love to get into that with any of y'all that are interested in that issue. There's always been, I want to say this appropriately, when you create a garden product, you want it to work well. You want it to be the real thing. And you give yourself the opportunity to see how it will work and at what level you need to put it on to have it work the most efficiently. So sometimes when we see a recommendation, for example, like a fertilizer recommendation, many of us will know, well, yeah, we could use this much, but maybe I'll use this much now, half of that, and then use the other half in a little bit of time. We make our own decisions about that. A lot of people do that around pesticides. We try, of course, every step in integrated pest management, and if we eventually have to use a pesticide, we try and pick one that doesn't require too much intrusion into the ecology. And then we turn right around again and make sure we don't have to use it any more often than it needs to be used. So, that being said, you know, we'll figure out how this one's going to fit into farms as well as gardens. But I'm glad that someone's working on it. University of Copenhagen's doing that. Jib in DeKalb, what's your muscadine question?
Yes, and we got some muscadines trying to grow out there on the, you know, like ones you would have mowed them. Is it okay to do that if we can't get them to grow that much? Or what should we do?
You can dig them up and transplant them right now. This is going to be a great week for doing that to everything that you want to dig up and move. All right? Thank you, Jeff. Have a wonderful day. It's going to be a little gray most places, but I think we'll get some sun this afternoon before it starts raining again.
Good digging weather.
Very, very, very good. It is such a moderate week in Zone 8 and much of 7 and 9 as well. It's not going to get super hot and it's not going to freeze too much. So I think we're in good shape for all of that. This is a good one. We'll talk about these questions. Y'all are asking some good ones this morning. We'll get it all together. I'll send you the potting mix recipe in the email, by the way. All right, now, get out your umbrellas. It's time. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from 3 licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
When you're disciplined.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.